The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
As we step into our interview, as we discuss credit card fraud with Mr. Justin Ram, an economist entrepreneur. Welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM. I hope you are well. Good morning to you.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. So from this story by our senior reporter, Peter Christopher, there has been in a joint select committee on finance and legal affairs, which examined existing anti-fraud and customer protection systems in the financial services sector. Opposition MP Saddam Hussein noted that there has been a decrease in debit card fraud since 2020. However, the reverse appeared to be true based on a 2023 statistic, with reports rising from a plateau in 2020 to some 2,700 cases in December of 2023. Now, this is something that seems to be on the rise. And from your perspective, first of all, let's find out who you are and how you became an economist and stepped into this side of understanding credit card fraud.
Okay, well, good morning and thanks for having me on. Well, my name is Justin Ram. I've been an economist for well over 25 years. I studied my first degree at UV, then did a PhD at London School of Economics and Business Science. This area of credit card fraud, although I'm speaking with you, it's really something that I've examined my own experiences, both as an entrepreneur. Are you hearing me okay? I'm hearing a bit of an echo.
Okay, so let's try this. Can you hear me now?
I am hearing you, yes. Yes, I'm hearing you. Yes, yeah, so this really came about through my own experiences as it relates to being an entrepreneur, but also what I have been doing with respect to my research on artificial intelligence and just for the overall knowledge of KYC and anti-money laundering legislation that I've seen around the world. Now, based on what I've seen from the reports and from the Joint Select Committee, I'm not surprised at some of the findings that they have found there. One of the things that has happened recently is that more and more people are starting to use chip and PIN cards instead of having to swipe your card. Because as you know, once you swipe your card, that is where you experience a lot of the possible risks of scamming, where people are able to take the data off of your cards once you have swiped. They tend to install actually mechanisms that can take the swiping information from your cards and then use that information to make purchases on their behalf, but using your card. But now with the introduction of chip and PIN, and I have to say it's quite unfortunate that in Trinidad and Tobago and perhaps across the Caribbean, it has taken so long for this technology to be introduced, because in most places, I would say in developed countries, this chip and PIN technology has been around for well over a decade. And so it has really helped with reduction of fraud. But what is happening now is that more and more people are purchasing online. And so when you purchase online, most people are then using their credit cards for those purchases, and they have to actually enter the card numbers. And if you're not using a secure site, or if you have someone who has managed to hack into your personal device, then it's quite easy for someone to then pick up on your credit card information and then use that information for their own purchases. And I think this is what is happening now more and more. But what we need to see in the Caribbean, and certainly in Trinidad and Tobago, is the advent of two or three step authentication as it relates to actual transactions online, so that it shouldn't be a situation.
Can I ask a question here? Now, with that information that you just gave us, is there a way that the average citizen who has decided to shop online to recognize what sites are fraudulent sites, what transactions can pose problems for them later on? What are some of the telltale signs that you've discovered within your own research with credit card fraud online?
Right. So certainly you want to, before you enter your credit card information on any site, you want to ensure that it is secure. And usually that ensure that it should have the HTTPS. Sometimes sites just have HTTP. You want to ensure that that S is there, which indicates that it is a secure site. But what I'm saying as well is that that also is not enough. You also need the banks to implement other authentication mechanisms so that once they see a transaction that is out of the ordinary from your normal purchases, they send you a message directly to either a contact number or an email that they have for you, and then you have to go on there and verify that this is indeed a legitimate transaction that you are putting through. If they don't get that, then they are supposed to block the transaction. And I have to admit, we don't have that as yet in Trinidad and Tobago. And I that's something the banks need to implement.
So you did describe the two-step verification. For those who are not aware of it, what would it look like or what would it appear like when, if it is finally instituted here in Trinidad and Tobago?
So they can take a number of different forms. So what would happen is that when you're doing online transactions, the bank would ask you, how would you like to authenticate a transaction that you might be doing online? They might ask you, can we send you a text message mm-hmm. asking you if this is a legitimate transaction that you are currently doing? And all you simply have to do is reply Y, saying yes, or N, saying no. And that would then indicate to the bank whether they should put this transaction through. Now, if the bank sends you that text message and you also do not reply in time, then they would immediately block the transaction. It might be a little bit of an inconvenience for you, but it would mean that they did not put through a transaction that they were not sure about. It could also mean that the bank then sends you a special code. And this is what I've seen, for example, the UK banks do. They send you a text message with a special code, let's say a 6-digit code. And before you can complete the transaction online, you have to enter that 6-digit code on the site that you are making that purchase. And that would then tell the bank, okay, this is the right person. They are doing the transaction. And so they would approve that transaction on your behalf. Alternatively, you might say to the bank, send me an email with that same information. So it all depends on the customer for which type of, I would say, communication is most efficient for them. For some people, it's going to be a text message. For some people, it might be an email. For some people, it might be a telephone call. They actually want to speak with someone. They may not be speaking with an actual person on the other side of the line. It might just be an autobot. But that doesn't matter. Once it's coming from the legitimate number from the bank, then that's the type of authentication that is required. Now, if you are making purchases regularly from a site and the bank knows that, yes, you have been doing this on a monthly basis, let's say, for example, you are purchasing off of Amazon, mm-hmm. yes, and the mm-hmm. bank knows that you make regular purchases off of Amazon, it might be that they would not bother to do this because they know that you are actually making purchases off of Amazon.
And that would come from your banking history and being in touch with the bank and letting them know, well, this is something that I do often. Now, the thing is, you're talking about two-step verification. For those who also use social media platforms, I find it very strange that there's that type of security for those platforms and not for the banking system. So you're saying that at the present moment, Trinidad and Tobago doesn't have a system like this in place?
Yeah, I'm saying that for many Caribbean territories,
across the Caribbean,
it's the same. Most of the territories use the same banks. Mm-hmm. The banks have not implemented this as yet, and this isn't particularly when you're using your credit or even your debit card for online transactions. Yes. Now, when you are physically present and you are making a transaction with your physical card, if you insert your card using the chip, you know the chip on the cards, and then you enter your PIN, then more than likely the bank knows that it is you who are making that transaction, because it's a personal PIN. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what it is, a personal identification number that you're not supposed to share with anyone. So this is also important information for your listeners, that PIN is supposed to be a personal identification number that only you are supposed to know. The issue here sometimes is that people sometimes give their cards and their PINs to other people to use, and they are actually opening themselves up to fraud there, because you never know who might pass on your PIN to someone who should not. And if you could imagine, if somebody gets physical possession of your card and they also know your PIN, then that can be really problematic. It would be very, very difficult for the bank to then issue you with a refund, because they can then prove that you might have given your PIN to somebody else when they have said to you that this is for your own use. Yes? And so it's important for your listeners to understand that as well.
Now, this seems to be something that is on the rise. According to the article I was just reading, this is from since, I guess, the period of COVID, where everybody seems to be at home and there was a heavy traffic online. Once again, I think a few more tips on how to shop online would be, you know, necessary for those listening, so that they can, you know, safeguard their online banking, etc., which is supposed to be secure. But have you any other tips?
Yeah, well, let me just reiterate, I'll start from the top. Mm-hmm. When you are making online transactions, you as the purchaser or the customer, remember that you are now handing over personal information to the whoever you are buying from. So first of all, you want to ensure that site is actually secure. That's really, really, your sites will give you the reassurance that they are secure, because they have implemented secure mechanisms, and you will see sometimes a lock icon on that site, give you the reassurance that it is secure and that no one can actually get into the site to steal the information off of you. Mm-hmm. And again, as I said before, you want to ensure that site says HTTPS at the beginning, which says that it is a secure site. Also, you want to ensure, you might want to read up on how that site and that merchandiser, for example, is going to deal with your own personal information. It should say that they are not going to keep your personal information for longer than a period of time. Mm. Or if it is that they are saying to you that you expect to be a repeat customer, that you must agree for them to keep your personal information, and they must give you some reassurance that they are keeping your information in a secure place that cannot be hacked. Now, you know, there are a lot of global hackers out here who are very, very good programmers who can hack into all sorts of sites. So from time to time, we can hear that sites have been hacked and companies have been hacked, and hackers have got access to personal information of customers. And whenever you hear that, and if you're a customer of that particular site or of that particular seller, you must be very, very concerned about it. Mm-hmm. And so it's important that your bank is also made aware that if you are a customer on a site or a customer of a particular merchandiser, and if that site has been hacked, that you want to make your bank aware of it, so that they can also be aware that your information might have been compromised and could possibly be used by perhaps hackers. So these are some of the things I think that's going to be really, really critical for people to be aware of when they're making online purchases. There are, of course, some sites out here that are very secure. I think most people would go onto Amazon, for example, and use that, and tend to not have many, many problems. So there are marketplaces that you can look for to buy rather than perhaps going directly to a merchandiser. It might cost you a little bit, but this is what it costs to be more secure. As you know, in any you sort of have to be willing to pay to avoid a possible future loss, as it were.
And I know that we're touching heavily on online shopping, seeing as that is the growing trend right now. What about the other forms of credit card fraud that we need to be aware of in terms of the public on our day-to-day interactions with merchandisers?
Yeah, well, online, of course, that's the main one that I think people need to be aware of, because what's happening here is that you are handing over a lot of the information as it relates not only to the card, but to you. Mm-hmm. You have to give, sometimes you have to give your date of birth. You also have to give your address, because that's how the credit card company is also verifying that it is you. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, that's a great opportunity for a hacker to steal your identity. Yes? Now they know everything about you. They know when you were born. They know where you live. And they can use that information and pretend that they are you. Now, another thing that I've noticed is that sometimes when you go to a restaurant, the waiter might ask you, are you ready to pay? And they ask you to hand over your credit card to them, and then they go and swipe and bring back a bill. Mm. I would suggest to your listeners, in this day and age, never do that anymore. Ensure that the waiter actually brings the credit card machine to you, or you go to where they have their credit card machine and you use the chip and pin of your card. You insert your card and you enter your pin. Try to avoid having your card swiped, because that, for me, is the biggest risk that you face. Secondly, when you hand over your credit card to someone, remember that they can simply take a quick photo of your credit card details. So they can take a photo of the front and the back of your card, and now they have that information, and they can now use that as well. I'm not saying that all waiters are like that at all. I'm not saying, but you do not know the person that you're dealing with. And to avoid any possibility of risk, whenever you are paying a bill, let's say at a restaurant or somewhere else, ensure that you are always present with your credit card, that nobody takes your credit card away from you, that gives them an opportunity to copy the information of your credit card. Because once they have all of that information, they can then utilize that information to make purchases for themselves online or on behalf of a third party. So always ensure that the waiter or someone brings a credit card machine to you, or you go to the credit card machine and make your payment. Do not give up your credit card or your debit card.
Let it out of your sight at all.
Exactly.
What about this new feature that some cards have now, this touch? Okay, so there's the chip in the card, and you just touch the device, and then it withdraws the money and so on. I've been hearing online, there was a particular story of a lady saying that the card was in her bag, and the information was somehow transferred, and she ended up paying for the person's items in front of her. She was in the line of a convenience store. I don't know if you heard that story. And she was behind, and her card was charged instead of the person that was in front. How safe is that technology? And what are some of the ways that we could protect ourselves? Like, for example, is it recommended that you change your passcode ever so often?
Well, the issue with that is banks have introduced that sort of payment system to make some payments quickly. What typically happens is that there is a limit as the amount of that payment. So I'm not sure, but for example, I think in some countries it might be 100 US is the most that you can pay with that app. Now, think about it. if someone has a device like that and they're going around and trying to, they know that perhaps you have your credit cards in your pocket, in your wallet, or in your handbags, they can go around with that machine and unbeknown to you and try to do the tapping while your credit card is there. Now, there are ways for you to protect yourself against that. Mm-hmm. First of all, you might say to the bank, when it comes to that tapping, this is the limit that I want, so that you can only ever possibly lose this certain amount. You are happy if you lose that amount. It's not going to affect you in any way. But of course, you don't want to lose anything. And so there are now wallets that you can purchase for the security. So that if anybody was to have that, so let's say that person in that news item that you were speaking about, if she had her credit card in a secure wallet that would disallow any sort of RFID information being accessed, then that would not have happened. So in knowing that, customers might think about putting their credit cards in a secure wallet, which prevents that sort of fraud from happening. Or in this instance, it probably was not fraud. It was just that the machine picked up her credit card instead of someone else's and paid for the purchaser in front of her. To prevent anything like that happening, there are special wallets and devices that you can buy to secure your credit card. I have had those for many years where my credit cards are actually in those types of wallets. So that, for example, when I'm traveling on the underground, let's say in London, there have been instances where people are trying to move around within the carriages with those types of credit card machines, trying to see if they can pick up somebody else's card and to sort of swipe information off of them simply through that tapping exercise. And before you know it, they have taken £40 or £50 off of you. And you could imagine that they're doing that to a number of people. Then they can have a sizable
over a period of time.
You know? Yes, exactly. So to prevent that from happening, you might want to invest in a secure wallet that you keep your credit card in, so that that can never happen to you. But remember that that tap device system was brought in by banks to make it easier for you to purchase a cup of coffee, let's say. So you can say to the bank, this is the limit that I'd like to have. I just want to be able to spend up to 100 TT, let's say, on a quick purchase. Anything more than that, I must insert my card and use my PIN for it. Yes?
I just wanted to find out what the numbers are like on a yearly basis or month-to-month basis that is lost from credit card fraud. What kind of numbers do you hear?
I'm not sure. There are global numbers which are probably in the billions of dollars. Now, what tends to happen is that if you pick up on those fraudulent transactions in time, and this is why it's really important for your customers to read the terms and conditions associated with their credit cards. So, for example, the moment you receive your credit card statement, is important for you to scour over that in great detail to see if any transactions on that statement are illegitimate. And you need to report those immediately to your bank, because the bank then gives you a period of time from which to lodge a complaint to say that that was a fraudulent transaction. And so you're demanding that that transaction be reversed. That then sets the bank in motion and seeks to secure the payment that was made to that customer and to get that money back and then to credit your account. So it's really, really important. But think about it. If you got your statement, and I think they give you about 30 days to do so. Mm-hmm. If you got your statement at the end of May and now you're in July and you're now discovering that fraudulent transaction, the bank will simply say to you, it's too late. We can't recover those funds. So it's really important for your customers to read and understand the terms and conditions associated with their credit cards and to ensure that they do what's important to ensure that they are not FISA. And I'm saying it could be paper statements, but it could also mean that customers go online on a regular basis to check what transactions have gone through on their accounts. Mm-hmm. They might also want to ensure that the banks are sending them regular updates. And so I think it's important for your listeners to understand that, look, the security of their funds and their resources is really largely their own responsibility. Mm-hmm. And it's important for them to take active charge of that by looking over the transactions that might have gone through on their card on a regular basis, alerting their bank so that their bank can put their fraud mechanisms in place to retrieve those stolen funds, but also then, more importantly, credit back those funds onto your card.
And that would come within, I guess, an education drive for the public to understand what exactly is happening. So probably you can define for us what is phishing and social engineering and how big a part cybersecurity plays in this overall problem.
Yeah. So FISA, of course, is... Now, if you think about it, you're operating here in the internet, which is quite global. There's sharing of a lot of information. And so, as I said before, you have hackers who are constantly trying to get access to your personal information. You have to be very, very mindful of that. And that is what phishing is all about. Sometimes you might get an email or even a WhatsApp message now, whereby if you click on that link that is sent to you, that link actually allows a hacker access to your device. And they can actually now take over your emails, get access to your personal information that you might have stored on your device. And these are the things you have to be very, very mindful of. Sometimes if you get a, let's say, for example, an email from someone who is saying that, let's say your password is about to be expired and you need to reset it, it's very important that you click and see what are the actual true credentials of that email address. So for example, you might think on the headline you're seeing an email from Amazon saying that you need to go on there on this link that we have sent you, password. Now, when you click on that email address that is coming to, you will discover that it's not actually an Amazon email account. It's actually from someone else. You should now indicate to your email provider that that was a scam and flag that email, because that is actually quite fraudulent. So what that will then do is that your email provider will try to block those types of emails going to anyone else from that particular email address. So it's really important that your customers look at that. Now, in the currently globally, we have heard a lot about the use of artificial intelligence. In many ways, banks and financial institutions are starting to discover the importance of using artificial intelligence and algorithms to determine sort of fraudulent transactions. So for example, through the use of that technology, they are utilizing in any information, your historic purchases, to determine if, for example, you are now all of a sudden purchasing something out of a country that you've never purchased from before, that they would flag that information and would immediately try to contact you about it. So the use of artificial intelligence now can be used for quite a lot of good. But in the same way, fraudsters also have access to this information, and you have to be very, very wary of it. So I would say to your listeners, be very careful of what personal information you are sharing. If, for example, somebody has asked you to share with them your WhatsApp in details, be very careful of what you're doing. Be very, very mindful of messages from people that you've never heard before, and be very careful of which links you are clicking on, because you have to ensure that those are legitimate links And that is not actually advising link that would then give someone who's trying to hack into your system, including to get information of your personal information.
Just from the information that you're giving us here today, I really think that probably a complete educational program should start, because, you know, a lot of, I don't know for other Caribbean members, but some Trinidadians just not into reading the fine print. You know, when you go into the bank to make sure that you have the convenience of the card, you're going to travel and all of that. So it really would help that kind of education thrust to understand the very nitty-gritty details of owning, let's say, credit card, financial status, and making sure that you have your statements and all of that kind of thing. What are some of the key points? Well, from what you were saying, some of the key factors that you can keep to the back of your mind to stay safe is to set limits on your tap feature as to how much money you're supposed to spend with that. Two-step verification, find out from your bank if that is in place. And also secure wallets. Where can you find those? Don't tell me to buy online, because then you'll have to kind of go through the process to get the wallet and put yourself at risk to get a safekeeping spot. But are there any other tips besides those that I just read out?
Yeah, well, so that's a good summary. I would say that, yes, I agree with you. Many people don't like to read the fine print. And if that is the case, look, there's a lot of information that you can actually get online. For example, in a video format, you know, people can search on YouTube around how to prevent credit card fraud, try to find legitimate sites related to that. But I think, as you were saying, on education, the banks really, and I would say the regulators, including the central bank, need to have a concerted effort on this. Start putting out short videos and ads on television and online on social media to alert people to possible fraud and how to go about preventing that fraud from affecting you. It's good for the individual, it's good for the banks, and really it's good for the nation as well. If a large number of the citizens of a nation are not being defrauded, if you think about it in that way. So really the central bank and the ultimate regulator needs to play an important role in this as well.
And recognize that economist is part of your title as well. Just taking a look from the perspective of being a Trini and understanding our climate here in TNT in terms of our economy, what predictions do you have, if you're willing to give any, seeing as we're coming up to the mid-year point, how we've been spending, how we've been recouping? What is our position according to your observations?
You know, Trinidad has been in a precarious situation for a long time. This has been in the making for well over a decade, unfortunately. What Trinidad has to do is to start realizing that it can no longer solely depend on revenues from oil and gas. And there needs to be a concerted effort to look at diversification of the economy. I know that must sound like very cliche because we keep saying it all the time, but it's really, really critical. And there must be a concerted effort to refashion the economy away from a dependency associated with government revenues. Exactly what we have been speaking about here with respect to online transactions and actually purchasing globally also means that there are a lot of opportunities for people who work in Trinidad to start offering their services abroad. So Trinidad needs to think about different ways of earning foreign exchange, which in any small open economy like ours is the lifeblood of the economy. And that does not mean that it always has to be large oil and gas projects. It can mean that individuals themselves can start selling what they do, either making products or services that they provide and selling those abroad. And if you think about it, in a global environment where we use the internet now, it's so much easier to do that. There are a number of other things. This, if I was to go into a lot more details, this would take us all another half an hour to discuss. But a number of things associated with education reform, I think, are critical. I always say to people, The number one reason for high crime in Trinidad is actually the common entrance and 11 plus exam. And it is high time that we get rid of that and ensure that all schools in Trinidad and Tobago provide good quality education. And, you know, the number one resource in Trinidad and Tobago are its people. And too many of our young people are falling out of social safety net. And I think that one thing I was reading this morning where one political leader was saying that we need to provide free medical students, fees for the medical students.
Mm.
I think what we really need now are more social workers. We need every child that is born in Trinidad and Tobago to be assigned to a social worker, and we get quarterly or half-yearly reports on how that child is progressing. And that is whether a child is from a rich or a poor family. Because what's happening now is that we are discovering problems with children at the age of 16, and that's much too late to make a detailed intervention. We need to know from much earlier on if a child is being left behind from the moment that child is 2 months old, that we as a society have an obligation to step in to ensure that that child becomes an individual that is productive, a creative trainee, as it were, to live out their true potential.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think we need to make a lot more investments.
Well, this, as you said, is a discussion that can continue for another half an hour for sure. So I would like to welcome you again to Freedom 106.5 FM at another date so that we can actually talk about that economic side of TNT. I do appreciate you to, you know, come on to the show today. And we will be, you know, getting in touch very soon, Mr. Ram. Thank you so much for joining us today. Are there any closing remarks that you want to leave with us in terms of keeping our credit cards and, of course, debit cards safe?
Yes, I want to say to you all listeners that we want to move away from a cash society for a number of reasons. Cash can actually stimulate criminal activity, and moving towards doing more digital transactions, like, for example, credit cards and debit cards, that's the way to go. But you have to also understand that you need to secure your transactions based on the things that we have already discussed. So I want to say to your listeners, do not move away from using digital or credit cards or debit cards, because you want to do more transactions like that. But just ensure that you are putting in place the mechanisms to keep your funds secure.
Thank you so much, Mr. Ram, and enjoy the rest of your day. And we will be speaking soon.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.